Please be turning in your Bibles to Genesis chapter 39. Genesis chapter 39, we'll begin our lesson there in just a moment. First of all, let me say, I too welcome those who are visiting with us. We're glad that you're here today. Whatever brought you this way, we are glad that you're here, and we hope that you can stay with us for a while. This afternoon, we meet again at 2 o'clock, and we hope that after a break lunch, you can come back and be with us for our afternoon service. As we've always made mention, if you're here today and we do or say things that you see are not in accordance with God's Word, we hope that you will bring that to our attention, that we might be able to discuss it with you, and if found to be right, that we will then make whatever changes are necessary. Our true desire is that we be right with God in all things. For those that are with us today that are members here, as always, we are glad that you are here as well. And we hope that in our lesson today we will find great study, that we will find great truths that we can help implement into our lives to bring us closer to God. We are all probably familiar with the story of Joseph. Joseph was the favored son of his father Jacob. And as a result of that status, his brothers became very jealous of him and eventually sold him into slavery. And we pick up in Genesis chapter 39 as we find now that Joseph has been brought into Egypt and has been made a slave in the household of Potiphar. Let's begin reading in chapter 39 and verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. And as we're going to see as we continue reading on through this passage, that because of the abilities that Joseph had as a result of God's blessing upon him, Joseph was made to be a steward in the household of Potiphar. Well, what is a steward? In fact, our lesson this morning is going to be dealing with the subject matter of stewardship. Well, what is a steward? Well, typically, or basically, a steward is a manager or an overseer of things entrusted to him. In the times, most of the biblical period, we find that a steward was typically a slave or a servant within a particular household. He was given certain duties to perform and kind of an elevated position, if you will, over others that were also in that household serving in various capacities. The servant, though, or this particular manager, though, being on an elevated level, then had certain aspects of his relationship with the owner that we need to be aware of as we need to consider this morning. In fact, there are three important aspects of this owner-steward relationship that we need to consider. First of all, we have to talk about ownership. And the ownership I'm talking about here is the material goods, perhaps in the case with Joseph, that did not belong to Joseph. He was entrusted with them, that he was responsible for them, but in actuality, he was not the owner of these things. Notice in chapter 39, again, verses 2 through 4, the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. Notice that the things of which Joseph had control belonged to someone else. They were not his. And if we go throughout the Bible, we see a number of instances where we find that various individuals serving in this capacity, and never were they the owner. They were always the one entrusted, but it belonged to someone else. So I want us to keep in mind then, as we talk about steward and stewardship, that we're talking about having responsibility for something that belongs to someone else. The second aspect of this relationship has to do with trust. We already talked about a number of times or made the word that these things were entrusted to him. Well, what is trust? The dictionary defines it this way. It is a firm reliance on the integrity, ability, or character of a person or thing. If I were to give my trust to someone, it is a recognition that they have certain characteristics, they have a certain character or ability that I can rely upon. They have integrity, and because of that integrity, then I am willing to put something of my own into their control. Again, going back to Genesis chapter 39, let's begin now in verse 6. It says, thus he left, that is talking about Potiphar, thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. And he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. And she said, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you. And so Potiphar has such faith in Joseph. He recognized the integrity, the ability, the character of this man, and he was willing to entrust everything. Even to the point it says that Potiphar himself did not know what he had in his house. He had his bread, and he was satisfied with that because he knew here was a man that he trusted and was willing to put all under him. The third aspect that we need to understand about this owner-steward relationship is accountability. That is the obligation to bear the consequences for failure to perform as expected. That if someone is going to serve as a steward, they're going to have to give an account for all that they do. If they find that they gave a good account, they will be blessed. If they do not account well, then they are going to be punished for that. We find parables in the New Testament that we'll speak of briefly a little bit later in that regard. Now, when it comes to this particular account, we find that Joseph was unjustly accused of advances toward Potiphar's wife. But from what Potiphar understood, here was this man who he trusted, who, as far as he could understand, believing his wife, violated that trust. So we go down to chapter 39 and to verse 20. Then Joseph's master took him and put him into prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. As far as Potiphar understood, Joseph had violated that trust. Whether it was justified or not, in this case it was not, really it's not important to the aspect of accountability that we want to apply to this relationship. So when we think about a steward, we think about someone who is controlling or has control of items that belong to another, that they have been given a trust to take care of those items, and then they are to be held accountable if they do not account themselves well or if they do not provide the service well. Now, the thing about stewards is this is not just a biblical time. This is not just something that happened in biblical times, nor is it just something that has to do with things of many hundreds of years ago. Stewards still are around today. In fact, we're going to find that we are all stewards, that we are in this owner-steward relationship with God. And as we'll see, God has entrusted us with his possessions, and we must prove ourselves worthy of that trust by being good stewards. And what I want to do this morning, and there are many different topics and many different areas of stewardship that we can talk about this morning, but I've chosen three that I want us to think about as we live each day in our relationship with God, knowing that we are his stewards. And the first thing that I want to talk about is, in the case of Joseph, the material goods. You know, we have an attitude today. We live in a material world, and we actually live in a very materialistic society. And because of that, sometimes we come away with this understanding, with this idea, that what we gain out of our own abilities, and therefore it belongs to us. For example, we may have this idea of, I've worked hard for my money, and it is mine. Well, in relation maybe to other individuals, that certainly may be the case. I've worked hard, and what I have earned belongs to me as opposed to somebody else. Or we may have this idea also that, you know what, I earned it, I owned it, and I can do with it as I please. And we find many in this world who take that attitude, who take that position, and as we're going to talk about a little bit later, misuse the things that they have. Well, while we may have possessions of material goods, we need to understand that ultimately it is God who owns it all. Listen to these verses that we find from the book of Psalms and the book of Job. In Psalm 24 and verse 1, "The earth is the Lord's and all its fullness, the world and all those who dwell therein." We remember the story of Job. Job, who, because of the suffering he was enduring, wanted to question God, wanted to put God on trial. But we find that ultimately what happens is that God puts Job on trial. And to ask him all these things to see what Job's understanding is, and to point out to Job that Job doesn't have the understanding that he thought that he had. But one of the comments that God makes to Job during this period in Job chapter 41 and verse 11, God says, "Who has preceded me that I should pay him?" The point being, God is saying, who of all these things that are around, who gave it to me? And of course, the answer is no one. God, who is the ultimate being of all the universe, is the one who's created all these things. And thus he says, everything under heaven is mine. So when we go through life and we think about all the possessions that we have and they belong to me and I can use them as I please, we need to keep in mind that these things actually belong to God. Consider for a moment the statement that Paul made in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 7. He said, "For we brought nothing into this world, and it is certain we carry nothing out." We didn't bring our possessions with us when we came into this world. And when we leave this world, those possessions that we do have, we're going to leave them here. We're not going to be taking them with us. So the question might then, well, how did we get these possessions in the first place? If we didn't bring them with us, and we're not going to take them with us when we leave, where did they come from? I believe the wise man Solomon gives us the answer in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 18. I invite you to turn to that passage. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 18. Solomon says, "Here is what I have seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life, which God gives him, for it is his heritage. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is the gift of God." So we look at these things that we have, the things that we have in our mind earned as a result of our labor. Ultimately, we need to understand that actually this comes from God. That God has blessed us with these things. That God has given us the abilities. I've been in the prayer this morning. The statement was made about thanking us for the ability to do the work and the ability to have a job so that we might be able to provide. Ultimately, we need to understand that God is the one that gave that to us, and it's not from ourselves. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, the children of Israel are preparing themselves to go into the land of Canaan to possess the land. And God warns them that they are not to have this attitude once they get there, that somehow they achieve this all on their own. Looking at chapter 8, beginning in verse 11, we're going to read down through verse 18. But notice beginning in verse 11, "Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes, which I command you today. Lest, when you have eaten and are full, and have built beautiful houses and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and your gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up, and you forget the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage, who led you through the great and terrible wilderness, in which were fiery serpents and scorpions, and thirsty land where there was no water, who brought water for you out of the flinty rock, who fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you and that he might test you to do you good in the end, that you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. And you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant with you, which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. In other words, he's warning them that they are to remember when they go into the land of promise, not to have the attitude, hey, we gained it on our own. No, the fact of the matter is, God led them to that, and God provided them. He gave them the ability to possess the land and to then pull the produce from it. And we should be the same way today. Never should we forget that although we work hard and we labor hard and we earn a living, as we often say it, that ultimately it comes from God. And God then has, as stewards, entrusted us with these possessions. Well, let's talk about what we do as stewards. Are we going to be a good steward of the things that God has given us? And I want to mention just a number of ways in which we can prove ourselves not to be good stewards of the material things God has entrusted to us. First of all, we can prove ourselves not a good steward by wasteful and prodigal living. We're familiar with the parable of the prodigal son, the one who had gone to his father and asked that things be given to him. Let's look over at Luke chapter 15. Luke chapter 15, beginning in verse 11. In this parable, Jesus says, a certain man had two sons, and the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falls to me. So he divided to him his livelihood. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together, journeyed to a far country, and there wasted his possessions with prodigal living. So the father, in order to please his son, gives the son that which for which he asks. But what does the son do with it? Does he go out and prove himself a good steward of these material things? No, the parable says he went out in prodigal or wasteful living and gave those things away in a very unworthy way. And we can do the same thing today. We take the things that we have been given to us by God, and we can waste them away in ways, you know, by not paying our bills, but spending it in ways that are not right. Or by going out and just playing with the money rather than taking care of the responsibilities that are placed upon us. That would be an abuse of our stewardship. We find over in Matthew chapter 24 another parable. It's interesting, as I was doing this lesson, just really how much the Bible and how much Jesus spends talking about our relationship and our dealing with material things. And perhaps it is because we do live in a material world that it becomes easy for us to abuse this. But in Matthew chapter 24, beginning in verse 45, we see another case in which an individual had these material things, but he abused what he had. Who then is his faithful and wise servant, whom his master made ruler over his household to give them food in due season? Here was the man who was responsible to see that the master's house was to be fed properly while the master was gone. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Assuredly, I say to you that he will make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant says in his heart, my master is delaying his coming, and begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with the drunkards, the master of that servant will come in a day in which he is not looking for him, and in an hour that he is not aware of, and will cut him in two and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Here's an individual who abused the power, abused the position that the owner, and abused the trust that the owner gave to him. But we can also show ourselves to be poor stewards by putting our trust in the wealth that has been given us, rather than putting our trust in God himself. I'm reminded of the rich fool in Luke chapter 12. Again, another parable by Jesus to tell us of the folly of putting too much emphasis upon our riches. Luke chapter 12, beginning in verse 15. Jesus said, take heed and beware of covetousness, For one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses. Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my good crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be part of you. Then whose will be those things by which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Some people define their lives. People find value in their lives by the things that they possess. And I find that to be very sad. In the recent news, we are perhaps all aware of Bernie Madoff, a man who swindled so many out of billions of dollars, who people entrusted to him their livelihood, and he abused that so that they lost it all. But what I think is more tragic, at least according to some of the news stories that I've seen, that some of those that had who had trusted him and given them all that they had, and he abused that and lost it for them, they killed themselves. My understanding, at least two individuals committed suicide because they lost all that they had. And while it is tragic and we can see it, the evil in what this man had done to them, I wonder about these individuals who their whole life seems to have been defined by the things that they possessed. And when they lost those possessions, they saw no reason for living. And I find that extremely tragic, not only because of this man and what he had done, but for the attitude that they had in life, trusting in those riches. But we also show ourselves to be poor stewards by making attaining material goods a higher priority than serving God himself. We won't take time to look at it, but I invite you to go read Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 34, where Jesus is instructing us that we are not to put our treasures and all that we have on earthly treasures, but on things that are spiritual, that we are to look to God and his kingdom rather than material things around us. That our focus is not to be on those things about what shall I eat and what shall I drink, but we should put our trust in God who will provide for us. And then also we find that we become poor stewards when we ignore the needs of others. 1 John chapter 3, verse 17. But whoever has this world's goods and see his brother in need, and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? That individual who has this world's goods, who is able to help those in need, yet turns their back on those individuals, those are individuals who are not being good stewards of the things that God has given. I kind of like the prayer, Proverbs chapter 30, that the wise man makes concerning wealth. And as I read this, I think, I hope that I can have this attitude throughout life. He says in Proverbs 30 and verse 8, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food allotted to me, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. But to be rich to the point that I say, I no longer need God, means I am not the steward I need to be. Well, we are stewards also in other ways, not just in material goods, but another way in which we find ourselves in a steward ownership, owner-steward relationship before God is in the fact that we as parents serve as stewards of our children. Looking over to Psalm chapter 127, verse 3. Psalm 127, verse 3. A statement is made there concerning children. The psalmist says, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate. We think, you know, we go out, a man and his wife, and they have children, and these are our children. And again, this attitude that sometimes that we will do with them as we please. But we need to understand that children themselves come from God. It is a gift that God has given us. I think Jacob makes an interesting statement to his brother Esau when he was coming back after having basically swindled his brother and left for many years out of fear. Then comes back, and as he's approaching his brother Esau raises a question. Genesis chapter 33 and verse 5. And it says, verse 4, but Esau ran to meet him. This is Jacob coming to him. And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him. And they wept. And he, that is Esau, lifted his eyes and saw the woman and children, women and children, and said, who are these with you? And so he said, and I love this statement, that who are these with you? So he said, the children whom God has graciously given your servant. Jacob recognized that this great family that he now has came from God. We have been entrusted with the souls of our young, and how are we to handle that trust? Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4 says, and you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. We just can't abandon our children. We just can't let them raise themselves. We are not just to say, hey, you know, we have these children and you know, we're going to make them work for us and they're going to be essentially our slaves. No, the way that we are to treat our children is as God would treat us. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. God has given us children, and we are stewards. That is, we have a trust to treat them as God would desire that they be treated. Over in 1 Samuel chapter 3, verse 13, again, we find an individual who was held accountable because of the neglect he had toward his children. Here we have the story of Eli. Eli, a priest of God, who did not raise his sons well. They were involved in womanizing. They were involved in extortion. And it says that Eli did not restrain his sons. Therefore, he was held accountable. In Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 13, there we are instructed, do not withhold correction from a child, that we are to beat them. I don't need to talk about abuse here, but that we are to discipline them, and it's not going to kill them. But part of our duty as a steward of our children is to raise them that they might be the individuals that God wants them to be. I think it's interesting in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 4 and 5, where it's giving us the qualifications for men who are going to serve as elders of the church. It says that part of this is that these are men who have proved themselves by the raising of their children. That they have shown that they are good stewards because they raise their children, and thus they can be entrusted with oversight of the Lord's congregation. So then, we find, though they're not material in the sense that they are the goods that we have, but they still are entrusted to us by God. And our society, I think, is failing in this regard in many ways. A recent study has shown that 40% of all births today in our country are out of wedlock. That they are being born to women who have not a husband, and in many cases, the man is not even a prominent part of that family unit. And within certain segments of that of the society, that number, that percentage, is much higher. One recent commentator has written a book in which he demonstrates through various studies that children from single-parent homes are more likely to be delinquent, more likely to drop out, more likely to be involved in the law, and more likely to end up in prison. God has given a way in which a man and a woman come together in a loving household and raise children. But if we violate that, if we don't adhere to that, then we are not being good stewards as God would have us to be. And finally, the last area that I want to discuss this morning briefly, in which we find stewardship relationship, and that is in the elders of the local congregation. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 7, Paul writes to Titus, for a bishop must be blameless as a steward of God. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, Acts chapter 20 and verse 28, as Paul is talking to the Ephesian elders, he gives what I believe is somewhat the duty or the charge that is given to the elders of the local congregation. Paul said, "Therefore take heed to yourselves and to all the flock, among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers." Again, notice here that it is God who has given us this position or given these men this trust. He says he has made you overseers to shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood. Who is the owner of this church? It's not these men serving in this capacity. It is God himself who owns it. He has given now to these men the trust that they would then oversee, that they would then guide the church as God would want to be guided. Look over at 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. Here Peter tells us something about the responsibility of these men who serve in this stewardship. He said, "The elders in verse 1 who are among you, I exhort, I who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of Christ and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed, shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion." In other words, you know, don't feel like you have to do this. But he says, "But willingly, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly." Don't abuse your position. "Nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away." And notice the three aspects of stewardship we're seeing here. It is, again, the idea that this is God's church, that they are simply overseeing that God, he says, that they have been entrusted to you, and there's going to be an accountability. If you do well, God will praise you. In Hebrews chapter 13, verse 17, we also see the idea of these men in their accountability. Hebrews 13, verse 17, "Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you." So these men, serving in this capacity, answer to a higher authority. Though they may be seen as the overseers of this congregation, and they are deserving of our respect and our submission, they in turn submit to that higher authority, that being God himself. Well, let's conclude our lesson this morning by turning to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. Again, we look at a parable that deals with stewardship. And I believe, again, we're going to see in this parable the three aspects: the idea of ownership, the idea of trust, and the idea of accountability. Beginning in chapter 25 and verse 14, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling in a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them." Now, understand, it is his goods that he's giving. "And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on his journey." Well, we know the story. We've read through this many times. That the first 2 of the servants went out and they gained more. They put those talents to work, and they received something, but the third man did not. The man who received the least was the individual who hid it. He did not put those talents to work. And then the master comes back, and now the accountability must be given. And to that last individual, we find that what he was given was taken away because he did not serve as a steward very well. And so it was taken away from him. And I think we need to keep this in mind as we think about the things that God has given us. Whether they be material things, whether they be children, whether they are children, or if we are put into the trust of God's people, how will we serve? We must always understand that what we have, we don't own. That God has entrusted it to us. And that one day we will have to give an account to what we've done with those things that God has given. God has given each of us the ability to understand his word. He has given us the ability to follow in the steps that he has provided. Yet some people have not chosen that way. And so we need to understand that they too will give an account. If you're here this morning and you are in that situation, understanding that God has given you the knowledge of His Word and wants you to use it as He desires, if you do not, one day you will stand and give an account. Or perhaps you have listened to that Word, you've been obedient, but you became an unfaithful steward. You've abused it, or in some way you have misused it. Then you too need to recognize that one day you will give an account. If we can help you this morning, the invitation is given.